What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Badum Biz. Anthony Frieda here. Man, I got a great guest. His name is Joe Palm. Joe Palm, you've heard his work. I've actually spoke about him with Luke Dowler and on last week's episode with Fern from Foes of Fern. He actually is the engineer who mixed both the song with Luke Dowler, which was called Get the Job Done, and the entire Foes of Fern album that just came out, which is called Carpe Diem. Please check them out. We talk a lot about that recording process in this episode. Joe's one of the actually chillest, nicest of dudes. So easy to work with. I've mentioned before about how he sets up a great environment in the studio to work and to be creative. I have to apologize in advance to you listeners. It's so funny, in a way. But my audio for my mic in this episode just sucks. And I tried everything, trying to mix it to sound good. It just sucks. And Joe sent me his audio, actually. And it sounds brilliant. It sounds amazing. And that's why he's the professional mix engineer. And I'm just a guy doing it in his home studio. So how fitting. Joe's a really talented dude. He's got a great ear. He's also the founder of Telegraph Hill Records. So be on the lookout for all the artists and recordings coming up out of Telegraph Hill Records. One last thing, I'm doing online drum lessons virtually, and I'm doing drum tracks for your songs. If those interest you, please email badumbiz@gmail.com. It'd be great to work with you. And without further ado, enjoy my conversation with Joe Palm. What's up, everybody? This is Badum Biz. Anthony Frieda here. I got an awesome guest. His name is Joe Pomerico. We call him Joe Palm. What's up, Joe?
How's it going, Anthony?
Thanks for being on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, I was honored. Grateful you asked me.
Oh, man. So I met Joe, and I actually mentioned him on a previous episode. That episode was with Luke Dowler, awesome songwriter. And man, I didn't know Joe. I didn't know Luke or Fern, who was also playing with us that day. I didn't know these guys that day that I walked into Atlantic Records. And the kindest dudes to be working with immediately without even meeting them. And Joe especially. So, dude, Luke and I were talking about it, and I mentioned, man, I was like extremely ecstatic about, you know, when you're going into a recording experience, there's like a little bit of pressure. There's a little bit of nerves there, you know, especially as a drummer. You want to make sure you get your drum track like really good so that the artist can track their vocals and whatever else, you know, kind of got to want to get out of the way. Right. And man, you set up a nice environment, really like low pressure, very cool vibe, man. That was cool.
Thanks, dude. That's what I always hope to do, is to make that kind of environment whenever we're making music, you know?
So can you talk about that as an engineer, man? Like, you have there's a lot on your shoulders as an engineer, and you would think you'd just be, you know, moving up faders and turning dials and setting up mics, but you're sort of managing an atmosphere.
Yeah, you're kind of like the temperature gauge for the whole room. You got to make sure everybody's playing nicely, playing off each other, able to do that in a good setting, a good environment. Maybe there's a few extra people hanging out, you know, making sure those are the right people, and you know, nothing to detract from the mission of getting a good record, you know.
Dude, it was cool too, because like you, we didn't go in with any plans either, really, and
not really.
While maybe to others that's, you know, very nerve wracking, to me, I feel like that's fun. That's exciting to me, and we kind of came up with the vibe of that song that Luke had written, Get the Job Done. And yeah, between, you know, like Fern and I, you know, Fern was playing bass, me on drums. We came up with a cool kind of sound. So I don't know, I guess we were thinking of the production a little bit. And then you were like,
stay right there. I'm going to bring out a mic and place it right here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cool.
Just watching you guys kind of vamp and figure out, I think it was the first time you two had played together. I don't know, maybe the first time you played with Luke, or really the first time in the studio, you're all together and seeing something where you're really dissecting each other's parts a little bit and not just like, you know, vibing out on stage, but like, hey, do this. Oh, he's making, especially Fern, he's really like focused in on, you know, your kick pattern and for the bass to lock that in. And I think it was awesome. Like Luke just kind of trusted those guys and the crew here to get a good rhythm track foundation. And like, it was a two-way street. As soon as I met Luke, you know, I just knew what a great talent he was, great vocalist. His songs are incredible. You know, he really knows how to craft tunes. And, you know, that's what the studio is all about. It starts with the song, you know, great players and a great environment.
So, dude, like, how often do you run into a situation like that where you don't really know the artist, but you're incredibly surprised, and maybe not even surprised, but you're definitely grateful, man, for the person you just met, the work that you put down, right?
Yeah. And with Luke, I guess he was one of the first that I had really only seen play maybe twice, maybe once or twice solo. And I knew right then, like, just the type of performer he was, that, you know, getting him in the studio would be nice. He could definitely make a hit. And, but a lot of the other, like, I guess, bands that I've worked with, I've seen them out playing together. So, you know, there's a little bit of a more experience seeing them in action, I guess. But I guess lately, I've been doing a little bit more work with some artists who, like, for instance, Patty C. I don't know if you know him. He had a song out on the compilation we put out with that Luke Dallar track. It was called Hey Mama. And he's been working with the Cranston Dean Band as his backing band. He gets just some different musicians every time in the studio. And most recently, him and Fern and Jared Clemens was playing drums on it. So,
oh wow,
it was the first time really any of them played with him on drums. It was one of the first times I had seen him play drums in the studio with some other players. And I was, you know, impressed on that same level of just like, you put some great players in a room, you have the faith that they're gonna vibe off each other and, you know, get a great song out of it, and, you know, I'll capture it nicely, get that magic, you know, that interaction that you can from musicians playing off of each other like that, and cut it into a record.
Man, such a cool job. I wish I had the skill set like that you had, because it seems like such a cool job to sit back. You have to facilitate a great environment like that. But I like how you just said capturing that magic. You know, that's really what it is.
Oh, yeah. It's an energy, you know?
Say that. Sorry, say that one. It cut out. Sorry about that.
It's an energy. You know, you can't, like, fake it. It's something intangible. You gotta just feel it. And when you're listening to music, you want it. You want to feel it. So why not feel it when you're making it, too, you know?
Definitely. What's your origin in music, man? Like, did you start playing an instrument?
Yeah, I picked up guitar when I was 12 and dabbled a little bit in songwriting and playing in a couple bands. I played in my first band with Fern, actually.
Oh, cool.
And played a little baseball at the time, too. So it's kind of split my time between that. And then as I, like, got deeper into the music stuff, I realized, like, starting recording demos and just kind of digging deeper into that path of how to make it sound better, because it wasn't my playing, definitely.
So what were you using to capture audio at first?
I mean, the first thing I ever recorded was my first Sony, like, tape boombox that had two microphone inputs that were eighth inch, and just figuring out how to make the amp that had two inputs work with the one vocal mic, and kind of cut a little demo. But then I eventually got Pro Tools, and that was like, you know, immediately game changer. Just was like, this is the industry standard software. Like, I'm going to fucking learn this, you know, forever. I'm going to be using this. This is the new instrument, you know?
Definitely. Did you go into any, like, I know there's a thing of people go and get like a certification for all that. Did you do any college level or any sort of
I ended up, I went to college at Ramapo College in North Jersey, and I studied music industry and production. So I guess I took like two basic recording classes, two like kind of electronic production. You know, it was a liberal arts college, didn't go too deeply, but really I was just nonstop recording musicians in my basement. My parents let me take over and has continued to take over even, especially in COVID times.
Oh yeah. COVID times.
Yeah.
We were just talking prior to recording that you just mentioned, and it's very, I'm very glad to hear it. Every time I have a guest on that, you know, when they say, oh yeah, I've been keeping busy, no problem. And they're in the music and the creative world, man. It makes me very happy.
Yeah, we're lucky. I mean, I've been just trying to keep the ball rolling on the recording projects because, you know, working with a lot of different artists and especially them, they've lost their main sort of gig of gigs, and that, you know, live music's kind of really taken a huge hit. But if they can stay inspired, if they're not, you know, obviously it's pretty downtime in general, just, but it's, if you're able to, you know, break through that and keep productive and stay inspired, like, this is a great time to just keep working on music and create, you know, to come out of this on like a whole nother level.
Have you been, I guess, virtually trading tracks back and forth, mixing down certain?
When we started quarantine and everyone was kind of keeping their distance and not really getting together with even like limited numbers, you know, with masks or whatever, we were trying to figure out how do we do some virtual stuff and keep the ball rolling. First thing I did was dig into the vault of, you know, I had a whole bunch of live recordings from different shows that we were tossing around and sitting on. So I ended up mixing those quickly. I got Dez and the Swagmatics, Pam Flores, Foes of Fern. Like, we put some live music out as soon as everybody lost it. And then we did a little bit of a whole live stream of some of the footage for that. And one of the cool projects I did at the start of the quarantine, which I just woke up this morning and there was like a Yahoo News article about it, was this Waiting on a Sunny Day cover. It was one of those quarantine cover videos that we were kind of, everyone was doing at that time. Still a little bit of those coming out, but, you know, there was a whole bunch of those. And I had started it like maybe early on. I came up with the idea. I started sending out some asks to people. Hey, you know, just record this cover on your phone. If you can get good audio, like on your end, that would be great, but, you know, not important. And I just like mixed it all up and threw the videos together and had like 30 different Asbury Park musicians on there.
Wow.
Ended up getting like 25K views. Bruce ended up sharing it. Like, it was
nice.
It was fun. It was a fun one. It feels like a blur though, because it was so, you know, it was three or four months ago, but this summer, man, went by.
It did. It definitely did. If you, and I, people have told me that, and those are the people that have kept busy. The people who have said that this time is dragged have sort of been waiting for things to go back to normal. So, I mean, hey, any listeners, man, get to just creating something for the sake of creating. It doesn't have to be good, and you don't have to share it. Think of it like skill development. Obviously, Joe's very skilled already, but you kind of were like, man, I imagine you were like, nobody saw this shit coming. And the people that I work with sort of rely, for them to be on their best, right? At their best, they rely on these gigs, these live performances. That's how you grow as a musician. So you're probably thinking like, man, we got to keep these people busy. I got to keep busy. We got to work together here. In a weird way, I imagine it brought musicians and creatives closer, you know?
Oh yeah. There was, I mean, for instance, I got Luke Dowler on the thing. He was up in Montana, you know, he was supposed to come back down for this, like around that time. So I was really bummed that we couldn't do another session together. And, you know, I was like, I got to include him in something cool, you know, something fun.
That's right. He was going to come for like in May or something. Right. And mm-hmm. do a show and then possibly record. Right. That's right. Cause he hit me up about that. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, that was going to be another good one. Hopefully he can make it out here soon. I mean, yeah. You know, we'll make it work. I've been tracking. I basically, with quarantine, moved out of New York City, came back to my parents' place and retook over the basement. I've got all my city furniture there. And I was actually, when I was moving out of the city, the my office, the studio I work at, they were like, is there anything, you know, we need to set you up to work from home and, you know, to continue make sure everything's going smoothly. And so they hooked me up with like some interface, some speakers, you know. So really just trying to use that stuff and keep working with artists to create some music.
Very cool, man. That's exciting. Yeah. I was going to ask you, so if this remote thing, I'm not going to say it's going to, I don't think it's going to fully go away, but you know, it'll always be there as an option. Would you say, like, as an engineer, do you think the idea of getting artists to be able to record themselves, like let's say a vocal track, do you think the technology is going to, do you think they're going to develop something where, you know, whether it's some sort of digital microphone that is its own interface, or I'm just throwing ideas out there. Like, what would make your job easier remotely?
Well, right now, the capabilities that you're able to get at home are incredible. I've been using the Universal Audio Apollo interfaces and the transformers in those, the digital emulations of some preamps. I'm able to have the exact same chain that I would have in the studio, you know, 1073, CO1B on vocals. Like, you can't beat that in the studio. That's what I've learned, like, my favorite gear is. And these digital versions sound really good. So people are able to just put up a little on their desktop and you know, mic up their mic, and it sounds like studio quality to an extent. Obviously, you need a treated room and all that. Yeah. You can never fix that stuff. But I think the biggest thing would be obviously that remote collaboration, being able to work on, like, say, a Google Doc, you know, how you're working in real time with another person. Mm-hmm. They're almost there. Some of the, we started looking into like the Pro Tools version. They have a Cloud Collaborate tool, but it's a little bit clunky. You got to like send it up to the cloud. Someone's got to download it. There's a couple other ones that, Splice uses, I think, one that, like, you can share sessions, but again, you're not working in real time on a session with somebody, so it's never going to be that, you know, in being in the room. You could be on a Zoom call and working on stuff that way. There was a fun night we had. There's this app called Listen To, where you're able to stream the, like, I guess you could put the plug-in on a master bus and send it out to you know, whoever you want to tune in. And we had our buddy, Mike Squillis. He was featured on the Foes of Fern album, and we were trying to do the final mixes, and we ended up sending him the link. He was listening on his end, and we had him up on the FaceTime too, and he was giving us feedback in real time. It was great.
Wow, okay. Yeah, because that's part of it. A lot of it's just like getting different ears on it during the recording process, because you spend so much time with the actual track that you kind of, what do you call that? Well, how would you describe that as an engineer? Like, where you have to kind of step back because you're too, I can't even explain. I don't even really know the words to describe that.
It's a little ear fatigue, you know? You're just kind of, you need a reset every now and then. It's good to listen to different stuff. Sometimes it's just good to give your ears a break.
Gotcha.
Silence.
Having those other ears help, though, in determining the mix, you know, and the balance of the parts and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You definitely always want to check it with a few different people and get their feedback. You have to be wary of how they're listening to, of course, and, you know, the format and all that. You definitely got to listen on multiple speakers, you know, especially now, like being at home. If you have, you know, speakers set up and you're kind of mixing, you're definitely not in a treated room, you know, so you're going to have to check it everywhere. Even that iPhone.
Would you say the car is a place?
The car is my favorite place to listen. I would used to be in the habit of like burning a mix to a CD and going right to the car and listening in my driveway years ago. But now that I'm back in Homedale, I started doing that a couple times.
I do like listening in music in general. I mean, I think that's where I listen to most of my music, unless I'm going like an exercise or something with headphones. But I love it in the car. I do really like that. So that's good to know for people, anybody wanting to check their mix, you know, does it sound good in your car? You know,
well, not only that, but you kind of, I feel like, have to be driving sometimes too, to give it the right test.
Yes.
You know, you can sit there and listen to a mix and it's good to critique, and I'll do that and take some notes. But, you know, getting down with the windows, just air flowing, especially in the summertime, it's nice to like blast a mix and see how it holds up. I mean, of course, certain songs obviously are more appropriate for that, but
man, I feel like I could pick your ear all day until you're even annoyed at it. Cause doing home recording, man, with drums, dude, there's so much to learn. And there's a lot of just fucking around with compressors, really.
Mm-hmm.
And EQ, different EQs, you know, all that stuff. What would you say if you're recording drums at home, other than having a treated room, which I can only do my best with that, but what's some advice?
I think the most important and the biggest factor at the start of it all is the mics that you choose, you know, making sure that you place them in a good spot. It can be tricky in certain rooms. If you're in a smaller, tighter room, there might be a lot more bleed, and there might be like the cymbals might come into the snare mic a little bit more than you would get in sort of a studio environment. So you maybe have to push the snare a little closer. You might have to get it, you know, a little bit less gain or something. There's a lot that you might have to do, just kind of toying with it. Or you deal with the bleed, you know, it's not ever going to be perfect. But I think mic choice is also very important. I love a 57 on the snare. I think, is that what you got right there?
Right. Yeah. Yes, sir.
And RE20 I've been using on the kick.
I'm gonna look this up right now. RE20.
Yeah, it's a good low end. I sometimes put it on the floor tom too, but I have a for home recording, I like these two drum mic packs. The first one would be the Lewitt drum mic pack, and they have a really cool kick drum mic that also has like a dynamic microphone and a condenser microphone in it, so it's just one microphone with two plugs. So you kind of, I don't know, especially if you're home worrying about space, maybe you put it inside the kick, you get the two tones. I like to put one on the inside, one on the out.
Yes. Yeah, me too. It's just when you run out of channels.
Yeah. How many channels you work with?
With having a bunch of channels, right, on with the kit.
Yeah. Oh, I like to have about 8 to 10.
8 to 10, right.
You know, I have 16, actually I have 24 inputs at my setup now.
Wow.
And I've been working with this, Universal Audio also makes some hardware. So they have the 710D. It's got four preamps with some 1176 style compressors in it.
Wow.
And, it's like four tubes. You can go between the tube and the transistor. So I usually go kick, kick, snare, snare right across there for that device. And then I have the overheads going through a 1073 preamp with I've been toying around with like a 414 type microphones for the overheads. They're really bright in that room. But I've actually been liking that on the room, just kind of one spaced out a little bit. In those, it's a small room, but just to have that other texture. And then I have the Audix drum mic pack also. Those overheads are pretty nice. So they're like little pencil type.
So let me ask you, because I've been using the, all right, it's 57, you can't go wrong. So I got 57 on the mic, on the snare, and even on the toms. I go back and forth between a Beta 52 or a D112 on the kick.
D112 is great.
D112 is great. I like the Beta 52. I like to fuck with it. I feel like I get better low end and more the brighter, crisper. Mm-hmm.
That's always good on the inside. I feel like the Beta 52 is not really great on the out. Like you really have to get it in there because sometimes it gets a little too much of the cymbals.
That's right. I've noticed that, definitely.
That's what the RE20 on the kick out has just been really kind of just gets that low end. You know, it's really not worried too much about the cymbals, especially with where you're placing it, the angle.
That's a huge part, what you said, which is angle. And if anybody is listening too, make sure you measure, take a tape measure, right? And you put, what do you put the one end in the middle of the snare?
Yeah.
Measure the distance between that and like, let's say the right side overhead. And make sure it's the same distance to the left side overhead.
Yep, I usually use a XLR because it's right there. Usually, right, have extras of those in the studio. But I mean, the same thing. You want to make sure those overheads are not giving you the snare more on one side or the, you know. So, but also sometimes it could be the kick too. You want to be mindful of both, really. So
Gotcha.
I wouldn't. Maybe the best place is kind of that spot in between the kick and the snare, you know, just to try to get both of those. 'Cause if you've got a left right signal of those overheads, you don't want like the kick sounding louder on one side.
That's a
Give
good
you some
point. Never thought
weird,
about that.
yeah, it could give you some weird sounds. I've
Did
also
you
been experimenting with like, you know, the close together but angled sort of like a Y over like the drummer's head, or I see like kind of how you have them real spread out, just pointed straight down. It depends. And then I actually used a 57 as a hi-hat mic the other day.
Oh yeah.
It was really nice.
Nice chunky kind of
Yeah.
sound, that sound.
It worked.
I was going to ask you about these. Do you know about the Slate Digital mics at all?
Oh, actually Jared Clemens has been like raving about them, and he's been demoing on an electric kit at home, and I was like, these are fake.
I got to tell you, man, like I'm using the two overheads. They're not that expensive too. It's like 150 per mic. But then the large diaphragm I have across the room there. But the mic modeling
Oh
technology is
yeah.
pretty crazy, man.
I mean, well, I thought you meant the Slate like plug-in virtual drums, the software instrument stuff. They sound
Yes.
incredible too, but I guess they're just Slate's just got the drumming stuff on lock.
Man, it's like $15 a month for like they're all access, all the plugins and stuff like that. You get compressors and all these EQs, virtual preamps. It does help. If you don't want to spend thousands of dollars, it does help. And you're just doing it from home.
Yeah, and if you're not really too actively using them, you can always take a pause or, you know,
That's right.
not pay for that month.
That's right.
Or forget about it and just keep paying.
Yeah.
I'm
Which I
telling you,
have done.
that's the future, is subscription models, everything.
That's right. That's right. So let's do you want to like jump into because on the Telegraph Hill Records page it says founder, right? Founder and president, founder, engineer, Joe Palm. How did that come together?
You know, as I started to just re recording myself, and I was recording with Fern, he started playing in a whole bunch of different bands and different projects. So I naturally just evolved from like a little recording operation in my basement to let's figure out how to make this more of a entity, you know, help and promote the music a little bit bigger than just quickly recording it, you know? And I was in school for the music industry, and I ended up graduating, working. I was working for one of my professors. He had a little independent label, would work at his house. He actually recommended I go to William Patterson. They had an MBA program in music management. So I was like, okay. I never really thought about grad school, but music, I'm not really sure what's gonna, you know, what's next after school. So why not? 2 months into that was when they took us on a tour of Atlantic Records, the whole Warner Music place. And I was like sticking around afterwards with like a project that I had. I was like, hey, can I talk to the engineers there? See, get their feedback on a mix and on this project I've been working on for a while. You know, I wasn't really, it was the first album project I was working on with like a main band. And it wasn't like, hey, hire me. You know, I wasn't like, hey, what do I got to do to be here? I just was like, let's connect, you know? And I kept on talking to them throughout while I was at school and still doing the recording thing on the side. But while I'm studying for my MBA, I'm trying to figure out how do I turn this like into a bona fide, you know, business. Really just a record label. So about a year later, after meeting the Atlantic people, I ended up getting an internship and did a whole semester there while I was still working part time at MLB Network.
Awesome.
So that was like my side gig. And I ended up, after the internship, start working part time. They would call me for a couple couple gigs, like in the sessions, they need extra support on, because there was really only one person there at the time. And I also, like, my first day working at Atlantic ended up being like for Ed Sheeran to come just perform for like 20 fans in the studio. I was like, this is gonna be a fun job if I can make it work.
Yeah, man.
And like my boss, he knew all along about my label thing and just kind of what was going on there. And he was always very supportive and encouraging of me trying to, like, you know, utilize whatever time I had at the office in the studio to work on my own projects and, you know, better my craft, you know. And when I first started my internship, that was when they put this nice API console in there. But before that, it was a nice C24 mixer, you know, controller, which currently now sits in Homedel.
Oh, wow.
So that it's basically out of date for them. So I've been trying to use it. So I'm in Atlantic basically a couple times a week. My boss was like, yeah, you can, you know, stay late and book the studio if you need to. And I think that was one of the first times Fern and his keyboard player came into Atlantic, and we ended up sleeping in the city that night too. So we went late, and we were working, because all throughout this time I was working on Fern's solo album and tracking it mostly in Homedel first, but now we started working on it in Atlantic. And you know, late nights, we'd track the piano in that big open area in the lobby, put a mic on the stage even. We were having fun experimenting. And then we, you know, school's continuing, and I ended up graduating. And my, like, final project was I made a business plan to make the label sort of this bigger thing than what it was, really. And that was when we ended up, like, figuring out our goal for that end of the year was that first Telegraph Hill Volume 1 compilation. It was the end of 2018. And most of that was, like, a lot of these projects that Fern had played in. And then there was a few. We started working with a couple different newcomers as we were sort of off the ground and running. And that's where we really started hitting our stride as, like, a label, you know? That first compilation, it sort of established working with multiple artists, doing something bigger than just let's just record, you know.
That's really cool, man. It kind of shows that you just kind of asked for, you know, advice on a mix you had or something to the people that worked there, you know. And how powerful do you think, or even necessary do you think, socialization is, or just being social, not, you know, kind of like breaking away that nerves of approaching somebody? Pretty powerful,
yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah. Networking is key in the music industry and entertainment, you know, field. It's just the only way you're really going to get honest feedback, honest development of your skills, you know, and it will help you open opportunities that you didn't have before, you know. People looking out for you is huge. I've had a few different mentors over the years. You know, right now my boss has been one of my biggest mentors, just guiding me through recording and the whole major label environment, you know, how to be an engineer for them. And beyond that, I've had some history with a guy who's played in bands since the 60s. His biggest band was the Rascals, if you might have heard of them.
Yes.
And Gene Cornish, the guitar player, he's been like a father, grandfather, like, person, big music industry mentor, rock and roll, like, you know, educator, just guiding me in those ways all the time. So even still, talk to him on the phone every now and then. But I used to really be like a guitar tech, studio assistant, just drive him to gigs, help him out at the gigs, all that. So,
wow. Yeah, so you heard it, everybody. I mean, you gotta
mentorship.
Like, don't be afraid to ask, right? Don't be afraid to ask for help or for advice or, you know, for their time, you know? Yeah, man, that's cool. That's powerful for people to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
So how many artists are on Telegraph Hill Records. You have Fern. You have, you said Pam Flores. I've heard of her. I've seen her through Instagram. Who else?
Well, it's mostly focused on the records that we've been kind of working with and highlighting from a lot of these different artists that are out in the scene. You know, it's not like I've signed them to only record with us and things of that nature. You know, I'm really just trying to produce some great sounding records and have hits and great moments with these tracks in the studio. And there's about 20 to 30 different artists that I've worked with over the past few years and wow. Try to continue, you know, see what's up. Some of them aren't really active anymore. Some of them have gone on and are working with bigger labels, which is really exciting. And, you know, there's a lot of different levels to it that, you know, some artists are really just a couple people who are like interested in developing and really getting off the ground. Whereas some of these people in Asbury Park are, you know, performing every day, you know what they're about. Like there's not much that we have to sort of help build for them. And we're just trying to help support them and amplify them in general. So it's you know, it's a range of different people, but
that's cool. I mean, the Asbury Park scene obviously is known for a lot of original artist activity. Yeah. For sure. Would you say that is that kind of, you know, where the focus is on to, or where you found people mostly?
100%. We definitely focus our whole efforts on bands, musicians, artists that have the goal of performing and making it like a career to perform throughout Asbury Park and obviously tour and launch out of that. But it starts at home, you know?
Absolutely. What attracts now, what I'm always curious, because you're an engineer, so you have a great ear and you know how things are. This is a weird thing to say, but you'll probably know what I mean, but you know how things are supposed to sound. Right. Like you, mm-hmm. you know, to the finite details of how something's supposed to sound. And you also know the capability of the artists that you're working with. Right. And the musicians right. that you're working with. So what are some things that like you look for when you're, I guess you're tailoring through, you know, if you wanted to have an artist record something for Telegraph Hill Records?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I look to see what I can help provide and guide a little bit. If an artist is able to record themselves, if they're happy going and working with an engineer, I'm not trying to like interrupt that, you know, and get in the middle of that. But if like there's opportunity to record with different musicians, maybe like you want to try something different, like that's you know, I'll have those conversations with some of those more self-sufficient people and see how they're doing. But when I look for like some of these bands that haven't been working with anybody, maybe they don't have records, maybe it's, you know, it's clear that they don't have a recorded component to their music, they're just focused on the live or, you know, writing, and they don't really understand that other side of it, the production. So I look where I can try to help make a difference and improve, you know. There's my, I guess not my favorite thing, but like I feel like I've had so much experience just between for Atlantic and you know, for my own stuff, tuning vocals and really finite perfecting those. Because I mean, if you listen to a pop record, nothing, there's not a single thing in it that's, you know, off pitch. So I've just been like seeing like when I listen to singers, you know, is there records just not hidden? Like everyone's going to be flat live now and then, you know, it's what it is. But like, are they putting out records that have that? Like, is no one's fixing that? An engineer's just letting that slip. Like that's the kind of stuff that I look for to see like, how I can maybe guide in a little bit different way, improve on. Are the timings off? Like, did somebody just quickly do a cut where they're recording, you know, the live take and they didn't go back and like I'll do 3, 4, maybe sometimes the most I've ever done was 30 takes in the studio with a band.
Wow.
There was a lot of heads and people just, you know, let's do it again. Everyone was on board for it. You know, we were all here for it. But I mean, that, you know, as a musician, what that could do.
Absolutely. You learn a lot about yourself. in those moments.
But when we did get the job done, we had to have done 7, maybe 10 takes at most of the tune. Maybe it was, we did that second tune, so I'm not sure. We were ironing out, you know, it was getting better every time. We were, you know, we were monitoring that. So like maybe when they were tracking the first time, they were rushed, you know, maybe they were paying for time and they're just like, choom, 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 let's go through these songs. You know, I'm not really worried about spending, you know, I'm not, the clock's not really ticking with us. So I'm really focused on, let's just get in the studio and make, do what it takes to get the job done.
No pun intended. Nice.
but that's what's important is just creating that. It comes back to the environment that is in the studio. I've worked with artists who you could see a clear frustration and just the energy, the atmosphere was different because the clock was ticking in their mind, not in, you know, I was trying to mitigate that, but like first some people, especially band leaders, I don't want to waste everybody's time and they start getting anxious. Like, why are we doing the 30 takes? Like,
I mean, it's kind of necessary though, to do a lot of takes sometimes.
It can be.
Right. I mean,
if it's getting better,
you're going to get better from doing it regardless. Actually, it's the mental game too, that you need to know that exists. That was so important for me as a drummer to realize like, oh, this stuff I thought was simple, but is so much more difficult when you have to be consistent note to note with that metronome. Mm-hmm. And even consistent every time I hit this rim shot, it's got to be, or I'm sorry, volume. I'm going for a rim shot. I have to try to hit it the same way every time. I mean, it's a really good test for yourself. It's a really, it kind of, it humbles you for sure as a drummer, definitely.
I mean, it's all about practice and rehearsal as musicians, like when you're training and perfecting your craft. So why not do that, you know, in the studio too, even, and get a little bit better in the moment?
Yeah.
And when you're working with different people too, it's key because, I mean, maybe you didn't notice what they were doing the first 3 times and now you've figured it out. And sometimes it really takes a few tries to hear something, you know, rhythmically or musically that you're just not hitting.
It's powerful to hear yourself back, right, with other people in the room who you trust. I mean, it's really powerful. It's helpful because, you're like, everybody's role in a band is different. Everybody's like the way they think about music or hear the music is different, but it'll help inform your knowledge about how you look at music, how you're taking in music. I mean, if you could apply how a bass player thinks about music, if you can apply that to the way you look, hear music, it's powerful, man. Bass players especially have a very unique perspective on music.
Oh yeah, dude. I love some great bass players. Oh, and there's a range of different ways you can approach it too. Like there's a lot of people have different styles. You know?
Yeah, that's right, man.
I mean, I guess it depends on what type of music you're playing, but it could be, you know, a little bit busier, especially when it comes to bass with recording. Like you really have to fit the track. Like you're not just filling up a space, you know. You can't be some tracks you're going to be a little bit busier, there's that room for it, you know, but others, like, you can't just be walking. You got to lock into what that drummer's doing with the kick pattern, you know.
So true. I was going to ask you too, so do you have any like cool stories about it, you know, being in a studio? You've done hundreds if not thousands of hours in a studio recording, right? So do you have any like really memorable, really cool stories? They could be positive or negative, you know.
I mean, there's a range of different experiences I've had, from, you know, major artists that didn't show up to the studio to just the way certain people have treated, you know, the environment, the space, the team. Especially with some of the video shoots that we'll do, like some artists just walk into the live room, never come into the control room and say hey or thanks, you know.
Oh wow.
But I mean, just being a studio engineer, the life, like just sitting in that room, like the amount of different experiences that have happened because of that. I'll tell you my favorite, the coolest one, and most humbling was when one day they were just like out of nowhere. There's like Chris Martin is in the office and he wants to just kill some time, play the piano. Is it cool like if he comes in there? Is it cool if he comes in there and sits there? Oh, I will not bother him. Don't you worry. Like I'm just a fly on the wall for that one. And he popped his head into the control room when he first got there. And he was like, do you guys mind? Like, okay. And then he sat down, he ended up having a meeting with a couple of the head execs in the label. They were sitting on the live room floor on that rug, Indian style. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like only for Chris Martin have I ever seen the president sit Indian style. But you know, then he's leaving and he doesn't have to do this, but he pops his head in and thanked us for just literally sitting in the library. Like I had nothing to do for him. I didn't even, you know, he thanked us. Meanwhile, like a couple weeks before we had Charlie Puth and he didn't even say anything into the control room and like just left. Like, you know, I was like, this is just different perspectives, you know?
I mean, I've heard nothing but positive things about Chris Martin and I really love Coldplay. I mean,
they're incredible.
That band too. They're, I'm sure this, you know what I mean by it's cool to see the evolution of a band and how they're still relevant every time they come up out with a new album. That new album might have a completely different sound, but it's still relevant. I mean, that's hard to do for a band, I would say. If you're just a vocal artist and you have producer, you can always get a new producer, right? As a band though, it's tough.
Yeah, I guess Chris Martin does a good job of keeping his all the musicians that he works with and part of it, you know, because he's just so incredibly talented. I mean, he's obviously such a nice guy that you know, a lot of bands maybe go off and do different things, whatever. But with Coldplay, like the way they've evolved and their sound, it's not like stayed stagnant. It's probably really fun for all of them to, you know, be a part of it. And it's awesome. Their sound is definitely like changed so much, but it's kept up with, if you look at like music and what's been popular and what's been possible, it's just kept up with that and evolved.
Absolutely. It's always relevant and it's always them too. That's the other thing. You know, it's like their signature is on the sound. You know it's them.
You
That's
know a Coldplay
cool.
song, yeah.
Hard to do.
There's a few artists that can do that, but now it's becoming more like, oh, that's that producer. You know, that's their sound.
Mm, that's right.
All the 80s stuff is coming back too, so.
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Big reverbs and gated drums.
What do you think as far as trends, like industry trends? I hear when I peek on the radio and listen to like top 10 stuff, I'll hear a lot of trap inspired stuff, but you have probably way more experience of what's actually going on and what the trends are, where things are going. What are things that are exciting? Are there any artists that are really exciting you right now?
I mean, I dig very deep into the local stuff, especially over the last few months. But one of my, I guess, favorite records that was released over the last few months was Mr. Wives. They put out their new album Super Bloom, and it's got a bunch of songs on it. It's honestly a lot of great tunes. Like I've listened to a lot of their music before, and I guess I felt like there's a few tracks that stand out to me, you know, that really like jump out and I'm like, these are hits. Like when I'm listening to this album, I'm like, I can just play this whole thing and just let it ride. And they all just like slam, you know.
When I listen to music, that's what I do. I kind of like pick albums to listen to straight through.
Oh, that's a great way to do it. I
love it.
I got ruined early when I got the iPod Shuffle. That Shuffle mode just killed me. I was like really into Oh, but I have so many different musical tastes. It's cool to have like this song just randomly play and then this song. But now that I'm, I guess, more like aware of that habit and whatever, like how much that I miss, you know, there's nothing like I get it with the vinyl. I'll put on a vinyl and then, you know, flip it over, and like that's really satisfying, you know, to
Absolutely.
go through it and just listen.
Absolutely. Do
This
you
is
have
one of
any
those albums,
sorry,
actually.
go ahead, man.
That Super Bloom is one of those albums for me that I could just play from the top. I could play it in shuffle too, you know, because it's just a good listen through of all the different songs, but
All the things you've referenced, I've typed in my Chrome here to check out
nice.
afterwards. I'm excited.
Yeah, we actually had Mr. Wives in the studio for Atlantic. They're on Elektra or Fueled by Ramen. So Warner Music owns Atlantic, and they own like all these different sub-labels. So for our studio, we just allow any of those artists free rein to use it. So over the last year and a half, 2 years, Mr. Wise has been one of the biggest bookers of the studio.
Wow.
Always in there, either just a drummer coming in to use our production space, record drum samples, you know.
Wow.
We have they have horns and different you know brass instruments on their stuff. So like being able to record those and like hanging out and seeing how all those musicians play off each other is it's just you know that's a good energy and it comes through on those songs. You know, about half of them were done in our space.
So you got to witness some of this.
Yeah,
Oh, so cool.
really cool. I was a engineer on one of the songs. I don't think it's on this record. It'll probably be on their next song called Girls.
That's
But
cool.
yeah,
That's
but I
cool.
basically, I mean, so I'm the second engineer in the studio. Ebony Smith, she's the main engineer. She's incredible. She was actually just on Pensado's place like a month ago. Yeah, I'm
Oh yeah,
sure
I know that
you know.
podcast. Yeah,
Yeah,
man.
it's huge. So she's one of my other great mentors right now that I get to look up to and just study how she's navigating the industry and growing her career because she's paving the way, I guess, for us in the studio, you know?
That's so cool. I like this idea of mentorship. It's powerful. It's, you know, you learn so much because you're seeing, well, you're getting the best advice, you know, from somebody who's experienced, you know, and maybe made some of the wrong decisions or made the right decisions, you know, and
I mean,
incredibly powerful.
it's definitely a factor into why I've kind of grown Telegraph the way I have because studying all the industry side of things and then talking, having conversations with artists who really don't understand it. I'm sitting in the label, you know, every day at the office in the city and seeing what the major world is doing, seeing what artists in Asbury Park are doing on Instagram at the shows, like all the time just studying this side of things. So I'm trying to A help the artist navigate that in a way that might help grow, but also, hey, there's a lot of interns and budding music industry people that really don't know where they fit, how they can sort of evolve and grow their career. And I know what that's like because, you know, being an entrepreneur and just kind of carving your own path, you gotta find that and that hustle. And I see a lot of these young industry people coming up that looking for their place. And what's great now is you see all these people starting, you know, their things right now in quarantine because this is what you got to do, you know?
Yeah. I liked what you said before, by the way. I wanted to highlight this where, because when I was asking you about what you look for artists when you're looking to make some work for Telegraph Records, Telegraph Hill Records. I
Yes.
liked when you said I'm listening, you know, I'll be listening to an artist. All right, if their vocals weren't tuned, you know, maybe they just didn't have the right mix engineer or something, or something is out of time. You know, I liked how you said, I like this, I like them, their material, or I like their sound. I want to help them. I want to make that sound better. You know, totally not about you, totally not, totally unselfish. You know, I like that a lot, man. That goes a long way.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not like trying to impart a sound onto people, you know? not changing their ways a lot. It's their art. Yeah, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to help facilitate it in a manner that's a little bit more polished, a little bit more professional, while also giving some better guidance and strategies.
So cool. That's so good. So necessary. Speaking of COVID, you know, like, what do you see for the future of the music industry, even like the independent music industry?
Well, I don't think it's the live streams. You know, I don't think these are going to last past this year, really. I think people are going to be itching to do more. You're seeing those car shows. I'm actually going to go to one tomorrow to see the Front Bottoms. Be my first car drive-in show.
Oh, those are happening with musicians now?
Yeah, they've been having a couple. Southside Johnny kicked it off at Mammoth Racetrack, and they had 1,000 cars. And the Front Bottoms are doing it tomorrow. And they just released their album. And I mean, that's kind of, they played one last night, I think, in Philly. And they're doing it again. Like, this is their album cycle tour. They're doing a couple of these, you know? And that's really, if we have to continue to do it, something like this, like, that's the way it could be the biggest, I feel like. You know, I don't know if music festivals are going to really come back the way that we're expecting, you know, at least for a year or two.
Yeah.
But I know, like, we're definitely going to have a rough winter. We're definitely going to be looking at this next summer and saying, you know, we're not too far off from where we are now, even, you know. I really feel that way.
Man, the drive-in idea is brilliant, though, because I know a couple comedians were doing it. And
Jim Gaffigan.
For anybody listening, it's like a drive-in movie theater, except there is a stage, and everybody's socially distanced in their cars, and they just have a great sound system. I mean, that's pretty much it. And
I think they broadcast
it too.
I don't know. I feel like I heard some people like complaining that they couldn't see. You know, maybe there's the projector, maybe not, but there's the FM radio transmission that, or it might be AM, but they're listening in their car stereos, to a direct feed.
Wow.
There was a local place down in Tom's River that was doing a few of these. There's some other just more like less, I guess, like more casual ones that have been happening too. And then obviously there's a lot of places that are doing that for movies, which is kind of cool.
So cool. So, so creative too. Cause you know, people want live music, man. People want to perform too. You know, that itch, I'm feeling the itch, man. I haven't performed since January.
Yeah. I'm looking forward right now. This weekend on Saturday, the 29th, we're performing at the Saint. Foes of Fern. It's 10 members, I think. 10 person maximum at the Saint. So no fans, but you know what? It's going to be a lot of fun just to play out the songs that for the record that we've been working on for 4 years and just give them, you know, birth them in a way that's a little different, more unique. I've seen a few of these live streams where people have been doing some full band stuff with the, you know, the good audio setups. And, I actually just recently got like a camera switcher. So I'm trying to set that up. I've been doing some test broadcasts from the studio in Homedale, just getting while we're tracking, just seeing how I can get the sync right, seeing the different camera angles I can get. But looking forward to doing a few more live streams in the future that are a little bit higher quality, you know, than someone just setting up their iPhone and playing off the that mic. And one really cool thing that we're probably on that same front that we the last 2 or 3 years we've been doing this event at the Wonder Bar at the end of the year called What a Wonderful Year, and it was kind of like this celebration of the whole community. There'd be all these different performers who was performing most throughout Asbury and just kind of all the time. It became like a end of year just kind of scene showcase, you know. So. And that's usually when we launch the compilation for our Telegraph Hill playlists, like at the end of the year where we put out a whole bunch of music. So we kind of try to create this whole like community big feel that weekend. And that we already booked it the December 26th and 27th, like immediately after last year, but obviously COVID's happening. So we're like trying to find ways how we can continue to make the event happen this year. And really trying to see if like we could do it virtually, have bands come in and out and perform on the stage live, but obviously really no fans.
Because cool, you're talking about Asbury Park, you're talking about the Saint, right? Legendary place. And then you're talking about Wonder Bar. I really like Wonder Bar.
That's
a
great venue. Incredible venue. One of my favorites, actually.
Yeah.
The room is so big and open. The sound system is incredible. The Saint and the Wonder Bar, I think, have the two best sound systems out of any of the venues. Stone Pony is obviously like right there too.
Yeah.
But so I feel like sometimes that room's just too wide that you can be in different parts of the room and it's got just, you know, it's not like the Saint's kind of that tight. Just you're right in front of it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Wonder Bar, you know. So that's my favorite thing is when I'm at shows, just kind of like dissecting it, from a mixed perspective and seeing how, I mean, not from a standpoint of like, oh, the live mix, whatever, you know, like what is the energy of this live performance? You know, what is in this room that is making people feel type of way, you know, and that's what people look for when they listen to music that keeps us coming out to live shows. So, you know, that's what's great about capturing it on a record and getting players to play live, you know, that's the magic and the energy that we're talking about here.
I love it, man. Do you think that people are, general population of people, do you think people are growing a hunger for live music right now?
I think so. I really don't know. And I would assume that once people can start going out and doing things again, that like music will definitely be like top of the list, you know, as far as activities.
You can't go to concerts. You can't go to the local bar, even in the city, man. You can't go to like 55 bar down or something.
Yeah. I don't understand. They won't let you sell tickets to an event, but they're letting music be an ancillary thing to whatever experience is happening at these places. Like, again, this is exactly the problem that musicians, artists have been facing over the few years. Like the art, the thing that they bring to the table at, you know, a live music setting, or, you know, if it's a dinner place or something, like there's an attraction there. They're bringing people, and like you got to pay them, you know, appropriately.
Absolutely.
You got to value them.
Absolutely. Last thing, by the way, I wanted to talk to you about was I want you to, you know, promote the new Foes of Fern record coming out. So go ahead, man. Talk about like how many members, and because you said like 10 members or something like that, the recording process, all that.
Yeah. I mean, the recording process started with me and Fern. He came to me with like a list of his songs that he had written up at that point, and he was like, I want to make this an album. And he had a bass and a drummer that, you know, he knew he could count on in the studio, and we started tracking the demos and just evolving it and adding to the tracks sort of one by one after that, seeing what it needed. And over the course of 4 years at this point, there might have been 50 plus people that played on it, you know. One of the coolest sessions that we had for it was we had sort of a like hang party at my beach house down in Ortley, where we had like 20, 30 people 2-3 years ago, pre-COVID. We had all these people come and sing gang vocals on the song. It was just one chorus, so we had like Fern with like his headphones on, the click track, listening and conducting the people, and everyone's heard the song out at his shows. They sing it along. So like, I had room mics upstairs, downstairs, like all throughout the beach house, and it just was so much fun to like do it. So like, that was the kind of sessions that we would try to continually have. Like in the city, we would have a few people come and hang. Critique the music, different artists, see what it's about, you know, working in the space. And there were so many different orchestral instruments that we've layered onto it. There's steel drums, accordion,
wow,
mandolin, He had saxophone players from Norway, like,
wow.
You know, so Fern went to Berklee College of Music and studied arranging and all this, that we really tried to apply it everywhere that we, you know, it felt right, but also tell a full story of these songs that had sort of a connecting theme. I mean, they're about personal experience, so that's obviously like someone's life. They don't not relate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But right. The perspectives I felt that were in each song are definitely like people can relate to them from all different walks of life and take their own meanings away from it. And what's cool is that you've probably heard, you know, Fern out there with an acoustic guitar, maybe it's drum and bass, a little more rocking, play these songs. And then if you listen to the record and you hear the production of just all these different, it feels like an army of musicians playing on this thing. It's like so funny to call it his solo project this whole time, you know?
That's right. Sounds like it. Yeah. It's such a cool name too, by the way.
Yeah, it's great. It worked out. No friends, just foes.
Yes.
And so, personally, like it shows the evolvement of the evolution of like the sound we would be able to get in Homedale versus now we're tracking in the studio in the city, and just then we're down at the beach. You know, it was tracked in various locations. He went up to Boston to record a harp.
Oh, wow.
So just like being able to pull it all together and have it sound so cohesive was like very key and a big, big mission for me to try to keep it organized. And especially when you're dealing with artists, some of them, you know, it's just chaos. It's good chaos though, you know, especially that's where the good music can come out of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Does he have a music video coming out too for a song?
Yeah. On the Monday after the release, there'll be a music video for the song that I was mentioning. The gang vocals are on Ghosts, Girl in All My Songs. And we started out with the album. And that was kind of the name. That was like the title track, the working name for the longest time. And because I guess like the girl in all my songs is very like, here's all my songs, like a few song called Lydia, Maria, Maria, like it's kind of like felt right. And now as we're getting closer to it, the other song that's sort of the other biggest song that Fern wrote it actually before any of them was called Carpe Diem. And that's the one that we really threw all the bells and whistles we could on it. You know, we tracked a trio, string trio. We ended up retracking more violins, all the trumpets, flugelhorn, you know.
Wow.
Just whatever we could. I mean, obviously it starts with the players, and we had a lot of good friends that we called upon to, you know, we knew what clarinet, saxophone, like, oh, you're great. Like, yeah, let's come up with parts. Fern had written out a lot of the sheet music, and then worked it out in the studio with the players too, to get some of the nuances that, you know, these great players would only, you know, understand or even recommend different changes. And it was really fun to like get that spontaneity of just the creative, like that fun, like let's create this, let's make a part. Like we ended up, there was some stuff that like, you know, in the first session, the drummer happened to do some little, like hi-hat bell thing in the chorus, and that evolved through, like he maybe did it a couple times. I'm editing the drums, I'm like, let's do this for the whole section, you know. And now like flash forward, we've got the strings emphasizing it, the horns emphasizing it, and it's like that stuff that couldn't really be conceived before you're through the process, you know. It just sort of happens throughout every step of the way.
So that was just like when you're, yeah, I mean, that's what musicians do, or, you know, you're fucking around like in between doing takes or, you know, practicing, rehearsing a song. And yeah, something like that. I love how that evolves into something unique to the song, you know. Very cool, man. That shit. By the way, Fern is, I didn't know he was like an arranger basically. So that's fucking badass.
Yeah, he studied it at Berklee College of Music in Boston.
That is badass, man.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So he gets a lot of ideas, and then you guys just have to make them come to life, basically.
Organize them, yeah. Sort them out. Take out the bad ones.
Yeah, you got to be able to know, like, ah, that one doesn't work.
Well, that's why it's really cool to have sort of the ability to he would write it out on sheet music and that having that language to communicate to the players who, you know, are playing off that and that's how they're trained. Like, it really, also the theory knowledge that he has is through the roof. So in the moment, being able to come up with new harmonies and things that it's like, oh, figure out if something's not working right. I love, so I bring up Fern's arranging and my engineering, and I always compare ourselves to, as we're in Atlantic Records studio, the great Arif Mardin and Tom Dowd. They were the two arranger and engineer on all the Rascal recordings. And
oh, wow.
If you listen to some of their stuff, like, they've got some crazy, crazy arrangements, and the orchestral stuff and some of the stuff is... It's not what you would think when you see a organ player, drummer, guitar player, and a guy with a tambourine on a stage at the Barge, you know?
That's it's a powerful combination.
Yeah.
You know? How do we get, I have an idea, and how do we make it sound good and balanced? You know? And with the energy of the song, I mean, engineer's job is hard, man. Holy shit. When I started just mixing at home, man, I immediately was like, all right, I played that drum part well, but how do I really, my bass drum's thin and got no thump to it. And, you know, how do I fucking do this?
I feel like you got to have a little bit of OCD as a mix engineer to just kind of keep everything neat and organized and sort of even and balanced. It's sort of the trick of the trade. But also, it's to taste, and, you know, you got to know what sounds good.
And that's where listening to everything, just, you know, and picking up on trends, you know, I think.
Oh, yeah. I'm always on Spotify listening to stuff, just trying to, I mean, a lot of it's between the label, the local level stuff, and the major label stuff. It's so different, but it's also the same. You know, like, it's music, and it should be able to... hit an audience in a way. Like, there are people out there that listen to all these different, you know, they're listening to drum and bass, they're listening to rap, they're listening to trap. Like, you know, there's so many different types of music, and as an engineer, you never know what some artist is going to come into the studio and want to record work on. Even you might be, you know, we've talked about people evolving their sound, and now, like, you just go, you know, you're going off the rails and add in some different stuff, but it's like heading in a direction. Sometimes you might have to reel them back in even, but also you don't want to like inhibit creativity. So you got to let them experiment and try things. And it's, you got to be willing to like risk and test the waters. And it's fun being in the studio and working with different levels of people who try different stuff like that and aren't afraid to like test it. Especially players who like can just shred on anything. Like, I love, like, Fern can pick up a guitar and shred it, but then you're like, let's try this keyboard synth thing, and like he just figures it out, and oh man, it's always a wonderful experience to have great players.
So he's a good player too, as you know, he's got a great musician's mind for all sounds, but he also could sit down on a keyboard. He played bass that day we were recording, but he also shreds on the guitar, you're saying. And he sings too, right?
Yeah, he does. Sang the whole album.
Talented motherfucker.
It's great. I'm also singing the harmonies on the album, a lot of them.
Nice.
He had like three or four other vocalists that sing with the Foes regularly, and made sure to, as they joined the band, go back and record them onto certain songs that they missed or whatever.
Oh, dude, that's so cool, man.
Really excited at this point to start working on like more music and get... his sort of established band now, because it started out as a solo project, kind of building the positions, if you will, of the team, to now he's established some roles that people are really part of this project and feel like, you know, they come up with ideas, they're contributing, and it's fun when like everybody's in on it, you know?
Man, the power of we is so powerful, man. I mean, the power of me is, all right, great, but it gets old. Yeah. When you can share that experience with other people. And, it, you know, and it's, and like you said, it's across the board. Everybody put their effort in. Everybody had their role. That's powerful.
Especially with music is you're getting everybody's sort of two cents in onto something that just adds it. It multiplies it all. You know, when it, music is, everybody's sort of has a piece in it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Nobody can like really just dictate it all, you know? Nobody wants it. And it's the same when you're on stage too, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it starts with a great conductor, of course. And that is what Fern did on this record.
I can't wait to hear it. I'm actually going to hit him up because I want to talk to him about it, man. Because
you should,
this sounds great. This sounds like this sounds like something. There's a lot of stories there. There are a lot of good stories, and I'm sure great experiences of just putting it together, you know?
Yeah. I was fortunate to like throw up my phone, a GoPro every now and then and get some B-roll in the studio. And it's fun to like look back on and see how it sort of evolved over time. Every step of the way for three years of demo mixes, you know, just like, okay, here we track this part. Here it is in this, you know, song. And like, every step of the way is there's something to go back and listen to a little demo of.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's fun sometimes. Every now and then you're like, oh, shit, that the way this sounded on that mix was so much better. What did I do to mess it up? Or... Typically, my biggest thing has been, like, over time, especially on a project that gets... ran through so many different rooms and so many different computers, like the plugins that you have on it, and maybe you stopped using certain ones, you stopped paying for certain ones, or you know, you just really like these right now. You know,
yeah.
It's funny how you can kind of shuffle through your plugins and just be like, oh, I'm all about this one, and I'm all about this is what I. You just go to that EQ every time, that compressor every time.
It sounds like the same as you know, as a drummer. It's like I'm really digging this cymbal. I don't need those other ones, but that'll change in a couple months, or this snare drum, or, you know, yeah, it's the same thing, man.
Well, I guess like part of that, and it comes again back to like mentoring and all that. I've seen a lot of different engineers come into the studio, and I've had to like shadow them and just be there as support. A lot of them, a lot of different Broadway recordings and watching the way that they, their styles, all different engineers have different styles, and just picking up a little bit here and there. What makes that one great? What makes that one great? It's fun.
If you were to, without going too, I mean, it's a hell of a lot of detail to go into to explain that, but what would be an example of a style? Is it the way that somebody uses the compression? Is it specific EQ to instrument, you know, I mean, could be a range of things, but
certain people, again, it always starts with the mic. Starts right at the source. So like certain people like one mic, some people like another mic on vocals. You know, some people like to route it through an EQ before the compressor. Some people like to route it after. I've been really digging, and I picked this up from Ebony actually, is recording through a de-esser on the vocals. Putting that on there and not being afraid to smack it, you know, like really crank that threshold and let it hit the compression, obviously only in like the brights and the highs, and it sounds like you're recording a polished radio vocal, and you're like, oh, you know,
wow.
And the way people navigate and route and just utilize Pro Tools is sometimes can be different. Some people like to have their templates and things set up and import them into their session every now and then. You know, that's always a quick way to move forward with like your effects and keep your some consistency to the sounds that you're using, especially in the digital realm where it's not an analog piece of gear that, you know, the knobs set at the same thing every time.
Yeah.
That's like some studios, they got that old piece of gear and the like threshold is just taped right there. So you're never adjusting it and you always just get the same sound there.
Yeah. Don't touch it. It's perfect the way it is.
Yeah.
One last, actually, I do have one more question because I'm curious. A guy with your ear, what is or are, if there are multiple, it could be a song, could be an album, that in kind of like, is it a representation of great engineering or your, what you like about how you, maybe a reference to how you try to achieve certain sounds, like what sticks out to you?
For me, I mean, I do a lot of stuff with real drums, so I guess every track you got to get a good reference for when you're mixing or producing or, you know, anything. When I'm mixing real drums, I just love the standard of just having a kit sound like something from a classic rock record, you know? So I'm always revisiting stuff from like Fleetwood Mac or Tom Petty records. Those are my two go-to. Just let me get dialed in on a kick, snare, hi-hat, like tone. Just, what is that crisp drum intro that, you know, let's get that sound on this too. And that's my number one like thing, I guess.
Something like on Dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything from that record or Tom Petty, Running Down a Dream is always a rocker. Breakdown, that I love those. Those are some clean, just straight shots drums that you can really blast in your room and get your ears tuned. How's that kick sitting? And the bass too is usually like how those play off each other. Now, when you're listening to some of the older stuff, there is a little bit of a, not fidelity, but just like, obviously nowadays everything's made for streaming and everything's at loudness over the top, overly compressed limiters. So it's difficult. You got to find some... You got to also check some new stuff. And then for me, I'm very fortunate like to have a good buddy of mine who does mastering. He was my roommate for the last 2 years and he started out as an intern in the studio. I convinced him to move in together. And then I was like, yeah, I'll start inviting you over to the studio all the time and you'll be working there in no time. It'll be full time for you, I'm sure.
How fucking cool is that?
And now he's getting hit up by, they send him mastering requests for major label stuff all the time now. And it's kind of awesome because he's really grown and come into his own. He's been talking and mentoring or getting mentored by some big mastering like names. Chris Gerringer is one of them. And he got to master this. Atlantic's putting out this Kids at Home like record where they had all sorts of artists record tunes for like, I guess, kids a little bit throughout this quarantine. And it was ranging from some people recorded it on their phones, just real cheap stuff, to like Portugal the Man is obviously going to record and produce a full blown thing. So they got theirs in really late. He masters it in a day, like on the deadline, He's talking to Chris Gerringer, and Chris Gerringer's like, yeah, I just mastered their full album that's coming out next month. And like, what I loved is that he moved to New York. He was going to NYU and I was like, hey man, you want to look, I got all these Asbury Park records. They need mastering. And like, I want to see you kind of help grow it and develop your skill set as a mastering engineer and have all these records under your belt. And he's sort of evolved his workflow over time too, which is awesome to see as he's getting advice from mentors, discovering different softwares. And that's the thing as an engineer is you always got to be researching and studying what else is out there, what's coming out, not just what sounds, what music, but what software, what equipment, what gear, all that. It's never anything. One of my favorite things, I don't know if you've ever gone, was NAMM. And I went to
wanted to.
Yeah, I went the last 2-3 years, and it's incredible to just see everything on the show floor, get debuted, hear people talk about it and demo it and show it. They always have great industry people who are having some success on panels and talk about, you know, their workflows. They have mix engineers pull up Pro Tools and show what they're doing. And it's so funny to like listen to these, just like analyze this audio, and you're in a loud convention setting, like convention hall, and it's super noisy. Like, but yeah, it's definitely a thing to network at. And there's so, like, I've ran into so many different people that I, you know, have bumped throughout the industry with and seen in different places, to then, you know, have them all come together once a year. It's kind of like a festival in and of itself.
It is so cool to see the photos and the videos from it. I'm at probably the last like 8 years I've followed it because of, you know, like certain cymbal companies, drum companies. Oh, what are they going to come out with? I'm so excited. But you do see that camaraderie over Instagram and stuff. Very cool to see that.
That's, I ran into Pam Flores this year when I was out there, because she was living in California then. Got together. I think there was a handful of Asbury folk out there that we kind of just all linked up and went to dinner, because we all knew her, really. So we just went out together at downtown Anaheim. And it's fun to, like, you know, be with your peers and do something that's a little different, but it's kind of like a vacation, or, you know.
Absolutely.
And I mean, for me, I was out there with the Atlantic team. So to then like be in this professional, like, I guess, feeling like I'm with my crew, and then see all my friends, like it's really awesome. We all hung out together and networked them. I love my other friend at work. So there's Zach Kornhauser. He's the mastering engineer. And then Kai Bound, he's like the drum tech at the studio, and he's an engineer as well, producer. He always tunes the drum kit for me before a session, and I make sure, like, hey, can you help me set that up just right, you know, the way you know how, you know. But at NAMM, he would just run around and play every drum set, every single one, you know.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So much fun.
It's cool that they'll let you do that. I don't know how it'll be in the future.
Right. I didn't think about that until now. Oh, my God.
And then you always... If you go to the one in Anaheim, you always got to take a day off and go to Disneyland.
Yeah. I think those are open, though. I think at least the one in Florida is.
I think Disney World is in Florida. Yeah.
I don't know how they're going about that. That's crazy.
Florida's crazy.
Well, Joe, man, I really appreciate you doing this, man.
Hell yeah, man. I'm this was fun.
Dude, like, you're, I think, my first mix engineer.
Cool. You know?
So your expertise is definitely valued, for sure.
Well, you're my first podcast that I've been on, so.
Oh, dude. I'm pretty sure. I'm honored, man. Honored.
Been thinking about getting one going for the Telegraph stuff, and kind of toying around with the ideas. Just trying to find people to help work on it together, you know.
Hey, man, I've had this idea because I just think I know too many, and I'm sure you can say the same thing, probably more than I can. I just know too many musicians who are so fucking talented that I find that musicians have a hard time translating who they are. And it doesn't even, sometimes their music is not enough for people to really find something to latch on to really like about an individual. I think comedians have it easier in that regard. They can show their personality immediately. But music is subjective, you know, and it's all interpreted. So a podcast, man, I always want like live performance too on the, you know, so COVID kind of squashed that for me, but for the future, definitely. I mean, it's just something I think would be, it's, you know what? It's something that I want to see. So I thought, you know what, how hard could it be? I know how to record shit. The hardest part would be mixing the performances, but that's fun to me.
That'll be cool.
So I appreciate you doing it, and I'm glad that you see the value in it.
Man, podcasts are everyone's kind of consuming them right now. Spotify themselves is really doubling down on podcasts as well.
Yes, they are.
I heard they're eventually probably going to make their way into live streaming too. So. That should be interesting to see the component of podcasting, live streaming, and now we're in radio. We're basically, Spotify is a radio station.
Basically, I wonder if you're going to turn on your you know, whatever's in your car one day. It's not even going to be like FM.
Oh, they already have that. They already have that. I mean, Sirius is doing that, but I'm pretty sure the, like, my mom just got a new car. It's got Wi-Fi in it. It's got like Google Maps, like everything app wise is right there.
Oh my God.
Pandora. Yeah. Spotify is definitely right pulling up that rear, and Apple Music too. Like, both those are the two, I think, just biggest players. Amazon and YouTube Music are probably gonna do some other things too. YouTube's obviously got their whole other thing, but Amazon, like, they're gonna be more of a streaming service. I don't see them breaking into like some different ground like a Spotify or Apple Music's trying to, you know, Apple Music has music videos in there too.
Oh, do they? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And Spotify has, they have video content. They've had video content.
There's some right? stuff, yeah. Some but it's stuff, nothing, right? There's no live streaming thing, and there's no, I guess, music videos sort of like page sort of thing. Like when you go to Apple Music and you search an artist, like their music videos are right there. Same thing with Tidal. Tidal is another good one from an engineering perspective. It gives you all the credits, people who are on the track, like if they distribute it with that. And
is that the Tidal? Is that
yep,
app you're
yep.
talking about?
Yeah. And it's, and Tidal allows you to stream like wave quality.
Oh, wow.
So when I'm in the studio, I don't have a membership, but my Zach, the mastering guy, has an account, and like we'll reference mixes from that, because if you're streaming off Spotify, it's an MP3 and it's usually not the best.
Not the best.
Thing to do when you're on this like studio speakers, you probably notice it a little more. If you're, you know, listening out to whatever you listen to your music on, you're not really going to notice the MP3.
Yes,
but a hi-fi system and good ears. I mean,
it is changing so much. It is cool, the ability for the artist at in their homes to put something down, record it, mix it, and share it. So cool. And then put it up on the spot, you know, Spotify, Apple Music. So cool. Such a cool time. You know,
it
it's
is
exciting.
But there still should be a strategy, and it's not just throwing shit on the internet, you know.
It's true.
It's building an audience and engaging with your fans and people who are following along to your story. Especially that's, you know, where the podcast helps extra. It's another narrative as opposed to like just the songwriting story that you're telling. So
that's right. That's right. Thanks for that, man. Appreciate that.
Hell yeah. Super glad you asked me. Super glad. As soon as I listened to the Luke Dowler one, I'm like, this is fun. These are great podcasts. Like you knew exactly what, you know, you were doing when you started this thing. I could tell, like, you know, you weren't just experimenting.
I appreciate that, man. That really means a lot. Cause yes, I was thinking about this for a very long time, and I listened to, actually all I listen to or watch is podcasts. I don't really even watch Netflix. I just watch podcasts.
Really?
You know, so I, you know, it's cool. It's cool to see people talk about real shit and you can learn real information about stuff. When was I going to know about bow hunting or surfing or, you know, like on that deep level, kind of like the level we're talking about, which is why I said I could pick your ear for hours about mixing, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God. But dude, if you're up for it, man, I would love to have you back on.
I would love to be back on. Maybe have an artist or two with me next time.
That would be fantastic. You know,
could do something. Definitely.
Awesome, man.
I look forward
to
hearing this.
Sorry, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
I'm looking forward to hearing this, you know?
I'm looking forward to mixing it. That's a pleasure, man. I always love mixing down the episodes. It's so fucking cool. It's so cool. I'm like excited to done it and share it. It's so cool.
Sounds a little time consuming though.
Oh yeah, of course. Couple hours go by, but then when you're done at the end of it, you're like, "Ooh, this is going to be worth it. I can't wait to drop it."
See, that's the extra side of the engineering that people always forget. Like, oh, they show up to the studio, they leave. It's like, it just sounds good, right? No, there's like, I'm cleaning up stuff, we're mixing, we're exporting, file didn't bounce right, got to convert it to an MP3. Like so many little extra tedious steps to this stuff that like you get, you know,
I thought I automated that. I have to go back and, you know, why is it going through that send? Oh, it's not supposed, you know.
Oh, I try not to listen to my mixes when I hit bounce sometimes and just listen to it afterwards because I'll stop it. I'll just keep stopping it and change something, you know?
Right. That's right. Yeah, you kind of that's that perfectionist ear. I totally suffered from that too, man. Oh my God. But yeah, you again, your insight as in your experience again is very valuable to me. So absolutely, would love to have you back on. So Joe Palm, please plug, man. Plug Telegraph Hill Records, right? That you can find it on Instagram, right?
Yeah, on Instagram or on Facebook, YouTube. We have a website, telegraphhillrecords.com, and you can pretty much find everything somewhere on there. So we have a TikTok. I don't know. It's all about reels now, apparently.
Yeah. I don't even know what that shit. I don't even know what to do with that shit, I'll be honest with you. But
a lot of great music. Definitely search us on Spotify too. A lot of playlists and different you know, combinations of music from the local scene. All what we're all about. So,
and your own Instagram page, Joe Palm Music, Joe JOEPOM Music. Yeah, give him some love, everybody. He's a cool dude.
Follow me
Such
up.
A cool fucking dude, man.
We'll follow you back.
Follow you back. Yeah, I love that, man.
Sub for sub.
That's right. That's right, man. Thank you again, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Anthony. This was awesome.
This was so awesome, man. Appreciate it. Cheers to you. All right. And, and everybody look out for Foes of Fern. Foes of Fern album dropping August 28th. 28th.
Yeah, 2 days from while we're recording this. So
August 28th. And then there's going to be a music video. Everybody look out for that. All right. Oh, yeah. Foes of Fern, Instagram. I'm going to link all this shit either way in the description. So everybody, write down in the description. Click all those links. Click follow.
Go to our Instagram. You'll see what we're up to. All the latest music, especially Foes of Fern. More music coming out in the fall. Stay tuned.
So fucking exciting, man. Thank you again, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, everybody.
Take care, Anthony.